speakers. Your recording has started. Speakers, you may begin.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everyone, to this legal sub-team on the ICANN's Enhancing ICANN's Accountability Cross-Community Working Group on the 21st of April, 2015. And this call is being recorded. I remind you to please state your name before speaking. And this is for the transcript record and, of course, to keep track of who's speaking. And I remind you to please raise your hand in the queue if you want to speak, and also to mute your lines in case you are not speaking at the moment. That is most helpful. And today we have many participants in the Adobe Connect room, and I'd like to call for anyone that's in the phone bridge that is not present at the Adobe Connect room. If there's anyone in the phone bridge that's not connected to the Adobe Connect, could you please state your name at this point so we can add you to the roll call?
Hi, Leon. This is Sam Eisner. I'm not able to be on the Adobe Connect room yet.
Welcome, Sam. Anyone else in the phone bridge? Okay, I didn't listen to anyone. So Sam's attendance is noted through the phone bridge. And, well, welcome all. Let's deep dive into our agenda of today. We have, of course, the welcome roll call. Then I intend to review the draft answers to the lawyers' questions with regards to their memorandum of April 17th, which I believe is so far pretty much finished. But, of course, I'd like to confirm this with the team members. And then after that, we'll jump into a discussion on the comparison charts. I feel that we still have some doubts or some concerns about the different comparison models. And we can review, of course, Chris Despain's questions and the answers to those questions that have already been addressed by the lawyers. We'll go through the working party two document review by the lawyers, and then we'll have a discussion with both Sidley and Adler. Team, which I see that we already have here, Holly, which is very useful, of course. And, well, without further delay, let's jump into the draft answers to the questions. Could we please have the draft document displayed on the screen? As you are aware, on the memorandum from April 17th, that was attached to the comparison governance chart with provided by the team. No, I think this is another memorandum that we have in the screen. This is the April 20th. So I am referring to the draft questions that were attached to the email that I sent along with the agenda. It's a Word document with some draft answers that have been drafted by many of us in the team. That is the one, exactly. So they raised some questions that, of course, need to be addressed for them to better provide advice to our team. And so far, this is the document. I believe that most of us in the legal sub-team have gone through it and have, of course, made some contributions to it. And the intent of this document is, of course, to have this draft by us in the legal sub-team, but I would also like to circulate it to the wider list, to the wider group, since this is a matter that, of course, involves everyone in the working group. So I just want to, for those who are not familiar with this but this document, of course, you will have access to it as soon as we are able to circulate it. I see some comments on the chat by David McCauley, including his suggestions. So yes, we will add those. to the document. This is the red line document submitted by. I'm sorry for that, by Greg Shadden yesterday. It is, of course, Of course, not a final draft. I just want to go through the questions to see if there's any concern that hasn't been great so far and that we should be including. So the first one is, how important is it for the accountability mechanisms to be binding, enforceable in court if necessary, versus reliant on voluntary compliance as in current system? And I think the most important thing for this group is to have these mechanisms enforceable, if I'm not mistaken. And, well, the draft answer by Greg Shadden and myself, and I think that it also reflects some comments from Robin and David, is that making accountability mechanisms binding is one of the most important concerns raised by the community. And binding accountability mechanisms are not truly binding if there is no way to enforce compliance. If a court or independent body is the only way to truly enforce compliance, then the ability to enforce a decision court is critical. I see Holly Gregory stand this up. Holly, could you please take the floor?
So thank you. That's a very clear answer, and it's muchly appreciated. In our view, some of the elements of what you currently have are very reliant on volunteer mechanisms. People are behaving under the bylaws as the bylaws state they should, but we have some questions about the degree to which some of the elements are truly enforceable. So it's very good for us to have this understanding, because we very much look at, when you ask us the question about viability, we very much look at it as meaning, could you ultimately enforce it? And therefore, that's how we are reflecting our answers to you. So I appreciate that very clear direction.
Thank you very much for this, Holly. And yes, when we ask about viability, we concretely mean two things, I believe. The first one being, if it's something that can be implementable according to law in California at this point. And the second concern, or the second point as to viability, would of course be enforceability, as you have depicted in your intervention. So yes, you're right. And I believe that both the Seedley and Adler teams have already been familiar to this draft since it's been circulated in the legal sub-team list in an open manner, of course. And, well, if I think we have many, many things to discuss in this call. And if there's, rather than going one at a time, I mean, through all of the questions, I would most likely, for time's sake and for practicality, would like to see if there's any objection to the answers so far included here. I see again Holly's hand, and I also saw Cavu's hand up, but I don't know why Cavu's lowered his hand. So if you don't mind, Holly, I'd like to go to Cavu's first. And Cavu, you have the floor.
Yes, Leon, thank you very much for allowing me to attend your meeting. I really appreciate it. I am a newcomer. I don't have sufficient familiarity with your text. I never did. I have read that. Leon, my question, humble question, is, could we at some time reply to the following manner? In the following manner: one, objectives, removal of single board member or board member, recall of the whole board, then change of bylaw, then approval of the budget, approval, when I say approval, means approval or rejection of the strategy, and any other decisions which is in the core missions. Could we put them as objectives in one side of column and open the two other columns and mention member model and designator model? Which one could reply to these things? I understood removal of the one board member. We could do it with a designator and with a member without any problem. I'm withdrawing, and so on and so forth. In that case, we would be in a position to better understand. Last night, I raised a question to the distinguished lawyer. They didn't reply me. I said that if we send a disapproval of the budget for reconsideration and comes back again, we send them back, he or she said that reconsideration, what does it mean? I was understood that even after two reconsideration requests, they reject that, then I go and have it recalling the whole board. Can we do that? So my question is that to have a clear understanding that what of these models reply to what of these objectives. And if not, how we could add something, for instance, to the designators to see whether some of them could be applied. I'm very sorry, this might be a very, very elementary question, but that is something that many people talk to me and they have the same problem that I have. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kevus, for this question. And there is no such thing as an elementary question from my point of view. Every question is worth asking. And I think that your concerns will be answered when we get into agenda point number 3, which is the discussion on the comparison charts on governance models, which precisely addresses what you are asking at the moment. It is a comparison chart between the two models, being this the designator and the membership model, and with regards to single member of the board removal, the whole board removal, and of course the budget approval and other mechanisms that have been put on the table for discussion. So when we jump into the third point of the agenda, I think your questions will be answered. And, of course, this is something that I would like to once again ask our lawyers. The only one present at this point is Holly, and I think that the group would really much appreciate that however complete and wonderful your answer had been, maybe having a summary chart in a very lean and clear language for those of us who are non-US lawyers, and most importantly, those of us who are not lawyers, could have a really clear understanding and a really clear guidance as to what the larger document refers to. So I see, Holly, you want to react to this. Please take the floor.
Yes, we would be happy to go through that document and make big, bold headline clarifying points throughout and resend it to you, if that would be helpful.
That would be very helpful. And if these bold headlines could be also maybe when convenient, of course, and when applied, when applicable, put into some kind of chart so we can have a very quick reference chart to the whole document in a very simple language, that would be also very helpful. So I see some comments on the chat. I see Robin is asking what is meant by reconsideration in the answer to A. Would you want to elaborate on that, Robin?
So was that to me? This is Robin.
Yes, we'll listen to you.
Okay, I'm just wondering what do we mean by that word reconsideration there? And it's just because, you know, these words have gotten us tripped up before in terms of thinking we meant one thing when somebody else thought it meant something else. And so I want to be clear, what exactly do we mean when we say reconsideration there? Because it seems like there are several different ways of slicing this where we could maybe get to the same place. And so if we find the right word.
Oh, okay. So it kind of goes a little bit into what Kavuz was telling about having the budget back and forth indefinitely and getting nowhere. So this answer to question 2A was drafted by Greg Shatton, who is, of course, with us in the call, and I'd like to hand it to him so he can, since he is the author of this sentence, I would like to call him to explain what he means by reconsideration in this context. So, Greg, could you please take the floor?
Thanks. I'll do that briefly, and then I see Holly has her hand up as well, so kind of outranking me in the chat, but since you're the chair, I will take the chair's cue.
I lowered my hand.
Thank you, Holly. In this case, first I was responding to the question number two, and while the question looked like it was drafted by me, it was just a distillation of the question that Sidley and Adler posed to us, which used the term reconsideration. In any event, as I understand and was using the term, reconsideration means a process by which a decision of the board is turned back to the board for them to, in essence, think harder about it. They are not required to change their result. The details beyond that are variable. Whether reconsideration can be a perpetual loop or whether reconsideration can only take place once, whether reconsideration demands a particular process by the board for reconsideration, and how detailed that is set out is a second variable. But most the only constant is that a decision is turned back by another body with the power to turn it back, but not the power to veto it, for the board to consider at least once more before making its decision final. The decision of the board. I think the idea in some of the WP1 discussions we've discussed what I would call worshiping at the Church of Our Lady of Perpetual Reconsideration, which would demand an endless loop of reconsiderations that seems to have been intended to, in essence, tire the board out or create essentially a filibuster. I don't think that's a particularly viable solution, nor is it a good way for an entity to conduct business. The alternative is to have reconsideration be limited to a single term or perhaps a second term by some alternate process, since one definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And then, if one doesn't like the result, perhaps there is at that point the power to spill the board and say that if you're not going to give us the answer we want, we'll find a board that will. That may or may not be the best result depending upon the decision. It's power to the people or it's mob rule depending upon what one might think of what's happening at any given time. But that's, I think I've gone beyond the question of what reconsideration itself is at this point, but I think that the idea is that it's an advisory return for a second thought by the board. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Greg. So if I understand well, of course, the meaning of reconsideration in this context is reconsideration as we have it now, and is, of course, what we don't want to have, and we should be looking, or we should be aiming to achieve reconsideration more in the context of the proposal that Robin has made through the working party, and to have an effective reconsideration rather than just a reconsideration that would be, of course, up to the board whether to take it or not. Next in the queue, I see Caboose. Caboose, could you please take the floor?
Yes, Leon. My understanding, after years of work, without claiming that I'm a lawyer, but I'm a little bit familiar with legal aspects, I think reconsideration is a natural process. Never anywhere in the world the people they used veto from the very beginning. It would be a very radical and inappropriate. The people start step by step. If they are not happy with something, they start for reconsideration. And then if their requirement is not met, then if have, they have the right to veto, they veto. But reconsideration is not an alternative for the veto. Reconsideration is a part of the process, which may end to veto in case that veto is foreseen. So I don't think that we could put in an alternative for veto. Reconsideration is a very national research, and it would be ambiguous, and even I would use this cell in inverted comma, very selfish, that from very beginning somebody veto something without allowing the other party the opportunity to reconsider to see what are the comments has been made. So is it possible that our distinguished lawyer could clarify that whether they see the term or process of reconsideration as an alternative to the veto or as a part of the veto, prerequisite to the veto? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cavus, and I can anticipate that our lawyers' answer to that will be that they will need our guidance to answer the question. So I'll go to Robin, who's next on the queue, and of course your question will of course be addressed later in the call. So Robin, could you please do you have a reaction to this?
Thank you. Yes, I just I alluded to this a little bit in the chat also, but I think what we want to be thinking about really what is our ultimate goal here, and I think we want to make sure that the board and the community are on the same page when it comes to the budget and the strategic plan. So it seems to me that whichever method we can achieve that goal is probably the way to look at it, rather than maybe backward of saying, well, can we do a reconsideration? Can we do a veto? Can we do an approval? But how do we build a process in such that we don't have to do a veto, that we don't have to ask for a reconsideration, such that it doesn't get that far along that the community and the board are on such drastic ends of the spectrum in terms of thinking on these issues? So, we already have a public comment period for the budget and the strategic plan. What if we just built something into that that said, if the community approves of that budget in that process, then it goes to the board for approval? And maybe we could gate that issue on the other side of the decision a little bit more easily. I'm just wondering if, we should be thinking, just trying to figure out ways of how to get to where we want to go, rather than trying to sort of, shoehorn things into specific words or specific proposals. But that's my thought on that. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Robin. And yes, we have to keep in mind that also any proposal that we want to put in place should be the simplest in implementation and simplest in form. And I'm closing the queue with Alan Greenberg. I'm mindful of the time. We're already 5 minutes past the time that was allocated for the discussion. So, Alan, could you please take the floor and be as brief as possible?
I will be. Thank you very much. I will be very brief. Cavus is correct that a veto is not the same as reconsideration. The point I think some of us have made is that we can make different decisions on how much leverage we need. And some people may consider reconsideration or forcing binding arbitration to be good enough. It's not the same as a veto. The board can still override us, perhaps, or the external arbitrator may decide against us, but that might be sufficient in the minds of some of us. So just making that clear. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alan. And I am pretty sure that Hall is taking note on this, and also Ed McNicholas is taking note of this. So we still have an hour for the lawyers to provide feedback on what they're listening at this stage. So I'd like to close the discussion on the document. I believe we have pretty much quite complete draft document. I will make a last revision today to make sure that everyone's comments so far are incorporated into the document. And then if we all agree, I will release it to the larger group for them to review, and of course, if they are if they agree with the answers that have been provided to the lawyers, then we would formally go back to the lawyers with these answers. And I see Thomas with your hands up. Thomas, could you please take the floor?
Thank you very much, Leon. I had sent a question to the chat earlier. Holly, you were kind enough to indicate that you will send these overviews to us. And I'm not sure you've responded in the chat. Is the this time tomorrow? Was that an answer to my question?
Yes, it was.
Okay. Well, that's just interesting for us to know for our intense work day. Thank you so much for the clarification.
I will try to get it to you sooner. I will try to get it to you by the end of the day today. The difficulty is that a number of us are traveling today. So we will do our best, but I will certainly have it to you no later than this time tomorrow.
Excellent. If I may, you know, just briefly, I've heard some comments from group members of the CCWG who actually had difficulties going through the very lengthy memos. So I think I'm sure we'll get to that when we come to the Q&A. I think we need to find ways where we actually have short management abstracts highlighting the main information for them to be able to follow our discussion more easily. But thank you so much. That's much appreciated.
Holly, I see your hand is raised. Could you
say
anything
before? Yes, we will do our best. You know, we're all working on very short time frames, and we're having to try to really work hard to get our product to you in a timely fashion and also at the right level of detail. We've found that when we haven't been that when we've tried to keep it very high level, we simply have many more questions that are generated. When we try to go very detailed, to the detailed level that we think it's necessary for folks to really understand the complexities and the nuances, I'm concerned that people both don't fully understand it, or maybe because it's so lengthy you're not fully reading it. What we will do in the chart and going forward, in the chart, we will try to put some headline conclusions in bold so that you can just draw your eyes to it. And in our memorandums in the future, we will try to do the same kind of bold, the major points, so that you can, rather than provide an executive summary up front, you can skim through it and essentially get your executive summary by having the bold points.
But this is a direct response to it. So if I may, sorry, Leon, for cutting across you, but I think the... I do understand that you need to work on all the detail and that you need to need due diligence on your work products. But what I think we need at this stage is get very short and concise, to the point answers in a relatively short period of time. And I know that you're producing these memos and that the memos need to be reviewed before they go out. And I think that can take a little bit longer. So I think that we could pursue a phased approach whereby you provide the short answers first. You have your sort of rough version of the long version, and you can really take longer to come up with that. And if in case... group members do not ask specific questions. We can just have the full memo on file for later as background information. In case they do ask, then we would need to ask group members for patience for you to come up with the paper. But I think we need to go from general to detail. So I think we don't want you to rush to provide advice, which then might be sloppy. So you should do what you have to do, but I think we can work on your responses from general to detailed.
Thanks, Thomas. And I see next on the queue is David McCauley, then Cavus. I don't know, Holly, is that an old hand or a new hand? That's an old hand. So, David, can you please take the floor?
Thank you, Leon. I know you closed the queue, but I just have I just want to make a real quick statement because I've seen some comments in the chat and some comments on the phone. I just want to confirm that the answer to 3B is the way that it's been drafted. And the 3B was the question where the lawyers asked us, should this power to bind the board go so far as being able to enforce community preference in court, or should there be reliance instead on the board's voluntary compliance after an arbitral ruling? And I just suspected at the end of the conversation that that may have been thrown into doubt. I would like to state my personal opinion that there has to be a final say in this case, and the board would be the corporate solution. The SOs and the ACs would be the multi-stakeholder solution, which is the preferred one, I believe. That's one of the key MTIA transition conditions, support and enhance the multi-stakeholder model. So what I'm saying is I think the answer that the power should go so far as to be able to enforce the community preference in court is the right answer, and I think that's what the new draft should come out with. That's my statement. Thank you.
Thank you very much, David. And last, Caboose, Greg, I will ask you if you have direct reaction. That's okay. But if not, I would ask you to lower your hand because the queue is closed. So, Caboose, do you have a reaction to this?
Yes, my reaction is one of the answers given by the lawyers. I mean, for the lawyer, it's quite simple. Not simple, but it is more easy to write a lengthy document, complex document. What I suggest that was, as she mentioned, to have executive summary, not more than 4 or 5 pages, and hyperlink to that any detailed information for anyone that wants to have more information, provided that the executive summary is totally consistent with the detailed document. So detailed document is very, very difficult to read, in particular when I told last night on CWD, in less than four days, we have 4 bulky documents which are very, very complex, and some of the texts are not consistent with each other. I'm very sorry to say that, at least in my reading, are not consistent. So executive summary, hyperlink the detailed documents, not more than 4 or 5 pages, in clear language for the non-legal people or less legally oriented people. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. I think by now the lawyers have this very clear. And now I'll go to Greg Chetum.
Thank you, Liana. I'll be brief. The question is whether we are going to finalize the document in front of us. So we've been working on it for several days now. I would think that we would want to finish it, but if not, what is the plan for finishing it?
Well, the plan for finishing it is that I will go through it today at the end of our call. I will review the different comments on the list to just make sure that all the comments have been incorporated to the document. And with that, I will circulate a final version for us to have a proofreading of the document, and then after that, we can just circulate it to the wider group list. Are you okay with that?
I'm okay, but I guess the question is whether we have everyone has reviewed the entire document and has no questions to raise on this call. I see Robin has a question to raise on this call.
Okay, well, if there are questions, we should definitely address them. So, Robin, do you want us to address your concern?
Hi. Yes. Thank you. I didn't know if we were going to go through this document sort of question by question, or if we were going to do it later, or what. But if now is the time to raise my contention with the answer in 4A, I will do it. It says here that the membership model would be preferable, and I'm still not there. I still think, given there are so many loose strings and concern, particularly from members of the GAC and from members of the CCNSO about how that structure would work for them. And I mean, I just think that I'm not comfortable saying that a membership model would be preferable at this point.
Okay, so which kind of answer would you suggest instead? Robin?
I think as I look at the question, I just think I don't know that we could answer it. I don't think that we can say, you know, it just says which is preferable, and I think there are too many unanswered questions to be able to say which is preferable at this point in time.
Because when I drafted this answer, I had in mind, of course, the goals we want to achieve and the powers we want to exercise. So from the reading of the different documents that Dolores have posed on us, my feeling is that the most appropriate structure would be a membership model that could enable us to exercise those powers in a better or more forceful way, to my understanding. But, of course, I might be wrong with that.
Well, my reading was that it could be done either way, and it might be a little bit trickier with the designator model, but it could be done. And so I think that given these additional complexities of, you know, this is a global governance organization that we're trying to fit into a California corporation, that we need some flexibility that, and the membership model might not provide that kind of flexibility. It might not work. And so if we can, in fact, achieve those objectives under the other model, and my understanding was that we can, but it's a little bit trickier and there's not a lot of precedent. Well, there's no precedent for anything ICANN has done. I mean, that's nothing new. We are the cutting edge of corporate global public governance, quasi-public, quasi-private. It's always been that way. It always will be that way. I don't think we can let that deter us. I think that we have to recognize that that's the way it is, that this is hard, this is complex, this is going to be tricky, and you know, that's why we retain some of these incredible legal minds, is because precisely because we do need to parse through these legal complexities, because I'm just not convinced that we can fit so easily, given the multi-stakeholder community and the geopolitical aspects of this. I don't think we can fit so easily under membership. And so from what I've heard, we can do it under designator. Yeah, it's a little trickier, but I think that, you know, it's worth exploring. We've got this great legal team to do, is to help us work through these difficult questions. So that's why I'm not comfortable at this point saying membership model is preferable.
Well, we do say that there's still an ongoing discussion, and we haven't, of course, decided which way to go. But I think Greg has a reaction to this. So, Greg, could you please take the floor?
Thanks. I think Robin is trying to answer more than the question that was posed, if we want to reject the question. But I think the question was asked of us, not invented by you, Leon. This is one of the ones that was asked by counsel. It's an if, X, and Y, you know, which way do you go sort of question. Sorry to kind of misphrase it. But it's really, you know, if under Model A you can have the power to bind the board, but under Model B you can only force the board to reconsider with a spilling the board as kind of a coercive power, which model would you prefer?
But can we? Because maybe we could build a process into the bylaws such that the community approval is before the board decision. So maybe we can gate that.
Well, that's what I say. It's not the question.
But if we
were going to rewrite the question, then we can answer a different question. But the answer to this question is, this question is, are we willing to settle for a format in which we can only force the board to reconsider and have...
But
if we start rewriting the question, that's kind of a different exercise.
I don't think that's what it
may
is.
Jump in and make a suggestion? Would it be okay if we, of course, take this answer as it is and add another sentence or another paragraph in which we state that we would also... Or we would very much like to further explore this possibility that you're putting on the table on whether a designator model could enable us to do such things by putting into the bylaws certain conditions that, of course, would create the conditions for us to have a more enforceable way to to deal with these issues?
Well, I'd like to hear perhaps from Holly if this is a kind of a false postulate. You know, I don't want this to be an if my mother had wheels, you know, she'd be a bus sort of proposition.
Good. Okay, so Holly, could you please
I want to say to you all, these kinds of discussions are very, very helpful for us lawyers. One of the difficulties that we're having a little bit in trying to make sure that we're giving you the best possible advice is usually we have opportunities to sit down with our clients and really dig down and understand their concerns and their goals, and sometimes help knowing their concerns help to shape the goals and then the mechanisms to get there. So we really value these kinds of discussions and debates, and it's helping me get a lot more clarity. I think the idea of having some ability for the community to have input into strategy and budget before it goes to the board is a very good one. I understand you have some of those processes now. And so I want to make sure I understand what about that currently isn't satisfactory, because, Robin, you're right, we could have some kind of mechanism by which the community comes up with an approval before something goes to the board, but I don't know that that community decision can bind the board in a non-membership model. So I'd love to understand more about what in the current processes of sort of a pre, you know, of community input isn't working, and whether you would be satisfied with a model in which the community had some mechanism to provide its input to the board on budget and strategy before the board makes a decision, and then the board makes a decision.
Thanks, Holly. Does anyone have an immediate reaction to what Holly has just said? I see some comments in the chat, and I do agree with Matthew that maybe this question might be not something that we can answer at this point as a legal sub-team group, and which would, of course, take us to then turn the answer for this question 4 into a placeholder for an answer at a later stage. So we can keep this open at this point and provide with a more precise answer for the lawyers at a later stage. And from for now, keep things open as they are. And I see Cavus have his raised at this point. So, Cavus, could you please take the floor?
Yes, Mr. English, Leon. I think at this stage, we should avoid to mention any preference for any of the models. We should just describe how we achieve the objectives. With member, this is the way to achieve. With designator, we may not achieve that. However, as Robin mentioned, by adding some additional procedure, we may also achieve that. But we should not, at this round of discussion, put any bias in the mind of the public saying that this is preferable or not preferable. We leave it to them to come, and maybe at the second round we say that based on the comments received from public, we understood that there is a tendency that this may be preferable to the others, but not ourselves, so we should not say that. And now I tend to agree with Robin that still we believe that with some designator additional procedure, we may achieve, may not 100%, but most of the things that we want to achieve. I understood that our main issue is budget and the strategy. I have not seen any argument for removal of the board or recall of the entire board or decision relating to the change of the bylaw. We have the same problem. All of the difficulty around the budget and the strategy. Is that the only two issues we have difficulty? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cavus. Next on the queue is Alan Greenberg. Alan, could you please take the floor?
Thank you. I'll be brief. I think from a purely legal point of view of what is implementable, what do we know how to do, the membership model is preferable. But factoring in all the other considerations we have to take, we, we have to look at, it may not be the one that we end up wanting to choose. So it's a matter of semantics. You know, does preferable mean we're going to go down that path, or simply from the pure legal issues, it is the easiest one or perhaps the only one that will give us exactly what we have asked for? So it's a matter of how we're using the word preferable. If preferable means this is an instruction to lawyers to not look at any other methods right now, then no, it isn't preferable. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this, Alan, and this is a very good point. And I don't think that the meaning of preferable at this stage would mean to instruct the lawyers to quit looking into other models, of course. And I agree with you. Next on the queue, I have Holly. Holly, could you please take the floor?
I'm sorry, Leon. I was bad, and I didn't get my hand down in time. I'm still learning.
No, you're an expert already. So next on the queue is Matthew. Matthew, could you please take the floor?
Thank you very much, Leon. This is Mathieu Bay speaking. And I think I want to really use this discussion as a platform to really set the stage of how we can best interact with the lawyers, and the independent lawyers. And I really think it's important that the notion of preference of the group is a notion that can only be handled at the CWT level and not in any subgroup, and that's very, very important. Yet, at the same time, there is a lot of value in exchanging with the lawyers on why we're asking questions, what we have in mind, and on the other side, answering the questions as they come from the lawyers to help be more effective in producing the documents. So what I'm seeing here is, number one, it's good to have questions from the lawyers. Number two, sometimes we cannot answer at the legal subgroup level or even at the CCWG level until we reach a decision. And I think that's a valuable answer. If we say, we don't know, that's useful. And third, I think there needs to be this kind of discussion up front as much as possible on most of the questions that we are directing, channeling to the lawyers, because that's going to spare us a lot of back and forth and a lot of time to be built as well. And finally, I think it's important to, and I'm giving my perception as co-chair of where we are in terms of the community mechanism options, it's important not to put aside any of the options on the table right now. And I think there are four. There are the member model, the designator model. There is the model, the what I call the Rudolph model, which is the model where all ASOACs would create a single member for ICANN. And I think it's important that we address this because it's been repeatedly asked, and we need to be discussing the pros and cons of this one. And there's the model that's been the subject of several questions by Chris Despain, which is basically the status quo where we don't create anything new. And it's important that we can provide visibility on the pros and cons of the various options and then hand this back to the CCWG as a whole for discussion. And I think that's a place where both the legal group as well as the lawyers, we need to be very careful to be in a position to inform the CCWG about the pros and cons and admit that there are currently different views and let the CCWG decide based on the trade-offs that we'll have to do. And I mean, highlighting the trade-offs is going to be key. So I think that's really what I'm seeing in this discussion. Thank you.
Mathieu, I think you've been asked to explain again the third option that you mentioned.
Thank you, Thomas. I did not hear that answer. The third answer, the Rudolph option, is I will try to find Rudolph's description, but I think from what my understanding was, that he was considering an option where the ASOs and ACs of ICANN would join into one unincorporated association, which would become a member of ICANN and would be the single member, and then would split the community council and everything. I think that was the idea. I know Roloff is not on the call, and I can dig for the email messages where he's trying to describe this. We'll do that right away if it's not clear enough so far.
So this is Thomas. Leon just wrote that his power dropped out and his line, so he's not on the line. He will be back with us shortly. So next in queue is Greg, please.
Thanks. As timing is felicitous, as I am wanted to say that I just pasted Roloff's description into the chat with that begins the sole membership construction.
Thanks, Greg.
That was not the main point from having my hand up, but I will let this go to Holly so we can keep that thread moving. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Holly is next.
So thank you, Greg, and I appreciate the written comment that you pasted in, and I will review it and read it. But as I understand it, then the third option is a variation on it is a membership model, but it's a variation on a membership model because it's a single member.
Yes, that is correct. Would you like to speak to that a little further now, Holly, or will you get back on that option to us in writing?
Well, certainly. I mean, so in as much as it's the membership that's important to be able to bind the board in the way that you can, whether the members are multiple members or a single member, you should be able to do the things that you need to do. And so to me, this is the kind of variation that you could certainly work on if you believe that this will help make it more implementable from a community standpoint. And I think that there's a variety of things we could look at to solve concerns around implementations. But I believe I have to double check with my California council, the Adler folks, but I believe you can have a single member. And in that case, you would be able to do the things that we're talking about. But we will get back to you. We will do a more precise analysis. But to me, that, you know, you're taking it into that clearer membership model, and from a legal perspective, and I want to make it just clear, I'm talking legally, that adds some clarity and some certainty around enforcement. Thank you.
Thanks, Holly. This is Thomas Rickert again, and I'm just stepping in as long as Leon is trying to get back on the call. But just for your information, we had a couple of views and some input on this single member model. There were questions asked surrounding the membership model where group members were concerned that if ICANN was to restructure its SOs and ACs as it has done in the past, that a membership model would potentially be less flexible. If the different SOs and ACs were members, and we had, for example, the DNSO a couple of years, or like more than 10 years back, which was then split into the CCNSO and the GNSO. And so the question would be, what is the destiny of these member organizations, and how flexible are we restructuring the community? Another concern was raised by Ed by email, asking if we go for the single member option, can individual SOs and ACs still exercise statutory rights, for example, with respect to inspecting documents and such? So I think, you know, this is just to set the scene a little bit. A single member might be less complex for restructuring, but there are some follow-up questions surrounding that, so I would suggest that you can maybe take this input from the transcript of this call, or Leon can provide you with an update on what the specific questions were, so that you can maybe provide feedback on that. Greg, you're next.
Thanks. I think that the single member point deserves probably some discussion, but frankly, it seems like it actually cuts off the individual members from exercising individual member rights directly as they relate to the board. For instance, recalling their board member. That may be incorrect. Maybe there's a way around that too, but I'm not sure whether the single member model actually solves any of the perceived problems of the multiple member model. But again, I think we can look to and since Rosemary is saying in the chat, you must be a legal person to be a member. I guess the question is whether you need to be. If we have a single member, do the members of that member, the participants in that member, have to be legal persons as well, or how would that single member entity be constructed? There are some people who are insistent that certain SOACs, at least SOACs, could not convert to members, but that's again an implementation question. The main point I actually put my hand up for is the issue of whether we're going to make a decision or not, or come out with a solution on the mechanism or structure level, as opposed to just a list of powers with no indication of a preference as to how those powers are actually put in place in a structure. I'm very concerned that coming out with no decision, even a straw man decision, since this is a non-consensus document, makes us look like we didn't get anywhere. At the least, obviously, we would have to express every alternative, but acting as if all the alternatives are equal after all the time we spent discussing them would seem to indicate a level of ineffectiveness that I don't think we actually have. I think we need to work on convergence, or at least having a sense of the room and the fact that we have a few people who talk a lot and have certain opinions, and I may or may not be one of them, doesn't necessarily mean that the room as a whole, which includes some who don't speak but whose opinions are as valuable as those who do, how everyone feels about that, whether it's the members or the participants. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. 2 points in response to what you said. I think that a decision on a specific model can't be made in the legal subteam. So we need to bring that out to the plenary, and in that regard, the legal subteam is doing preparatory work to inform the CCWG, if not the wider community. So I think it doesn't do any harm if we maybe shortlist two options and put those in front of the community and let the community weigh in. There's another point that I'd like to make, and that doesn't go specifically to you, but I think it's a general point that I observed on the list. Sometimes when we raise questions, group members make an attempt to answer the question, but that sometimes goes into the area of speculation. So I would suggest that in order to streamline our conversation, if we have questions, let's put them in front of the lawyers, and let's not make our own attempt to answer them, because that might not be completely accurate and actually add to confusion. I know that we're 1 hour into the call, I think that Leon is back on the call, so I will check out shortly. But before I do, let's hear Cavus and then Holly, and then I think we should close the queue and move on to the next subject. Cavus.
I raised down my hand.
Oh, thank you, Cavus. Holly.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to mention that from the lawyer's perspective,
we have found it somewhat helpful when members of the community do comment on questions. We don't get swayed by those comments, but it often provides us with greater insight around what the issue is, and we can find some greater clarity in trying to understand what the question really works from and what it means. So from our perspective, I think it's, you know, we don't mind that. It doesn't obstruct things from our point of view and does help provide some greater clarity at times. You know, with that said, we will defer to whatever processes you choose.
Thank you, Holly. No, I'm not sure. Cavus, is that an old hand? Or have you raised your hand again?
No, it is not me, no. I didn't, yeah, sorry.
Not to worry.
No. No, please go ahead with others.
Okay, so I think that Leon is back on the call. So, Leon, can you confirm that you're back? And I'm more than happy for you to take back over.
Yes, Thomas, I'm back on the call. I'm sorry for that hiccup. I run through a power outage suddenly here where I am, and also have some kind of emergency here. But I'm back. So I really appreciate you taking the lead, Thomas. I thank you for that. And, well, of course, I tried to catch up with this. I think we were speaking about the sold membership issue. And so let's say, Holly, is that an old hand or a new hand?
I'm taking it down. It's an old hand. Sorry.
Okay, so are there any other questions, concerns, or comments with regards to the issue that was discussed? And, of course, with the document in display, which is the draft answers, or could we close this subject in the agenda, this agenda item, and jump into the third point of the agenda, which is the discussion, the comparison chart on governance models, and which will, of course, be linked to what we've been discussing so far, and will also provide some answers to many questions that have been asked during the call and during our general calls, and of course through the list. So just to summarize, as I was saying, I will go through a last review of the draft answers, consolidate any comments, change the things that need to be changed as per our call at this stage, and circulate it first to the legal subgroup for proofreading, and after having a proofreading, I will circulate to the larger group. Do we have an agreement on that? Okay, I see no objections, so I assume that we have an agreement. I see Greg is signaling with a green tick, so yes. Well, now I see Ed Morris hand this up, so Ed, could you please take the floor? Ed? Ed, do you want to speak? Okay, I don't know if Ed Morris wants to speak or not. I just saw his hand up and down. But, of course, feel free to jump in if you want to raise any concerns, Ed. Well, going into the third point of the agenda, this is the memo that, of course, raised the questions that we were just discussing moments ago. And this is a document that reflects in a chart a comparison between the two models, the designator and the membership model. We have in the first slide the full board recall. Then on the second, the individual director recall. Then the third point would be the approve of regular amendments to articles of incorporation or bylaws. And then the fourth point would be approving changes to fundamental, rather than call them, but fundamental bylaws or articles or provisions. And then the fifth one, the approval of the strategic plan. And the sixth one, the approval of budget. So I think these are the points that Cavus was raising, and the points that he felt that haven't had an answer so far. But I believe that the answers for those concerns and questions do lie in these documents. And I think we've all had the chance to go through the document at this stage. And as I said with the previous document, rather than going through all of the points in the document, I would encourage the discussion on any points or any issues that you see problematic or that still encompass any doubts. I believe that, for example, if we take a look at the full board recall, the answer for the lawyers is that in both models, it can be done. It, of course, involves different types of approaches, but this is something that can, in fact, be done. So maybe we could go through the document in a very quick way. I would like, Holly, if you agree, I would like to provide us with a walkthrough of the document in a very quick way and a very summarized way, just as an intent to for those who are non-U.S. lawyers and non-lawyers to understand the big picture that you are putting in front of us. Like, for example, when we are speaking about full board recall, is this possible or not, and maybe which kind of challenges this carries with each of the different models. So, Holly, could you please take us through the document?
Yes. Thank you, Leon. If it's okay with everyone, I'm going to turn to my colleague, Josh Hoffheimer, who's joined us on the call, and ask that he walk us through at the high level. Is that okay with you, Josh?
Sure. Sure, I can do it. And I assume that is everybody on this call, were you all on the call yesterday where Rosemary and I came at this at a very high level?
Most people were present, and I think we can, of course, save the details, but rather than going through details, have this high-level walk through the document. And, of course, I encourage those who have questions to raise them. Cavus, we would pay special attention to your questions if you have some issues that you need clarification after going through the document. So, Josh, please, could you walk us through?
Sure. Okay. And, well, Rosemary, why don't we do what we did yesterday, where I'll start and you can come in behind it.
Sure, that's great.
Just to and to make it clear, so from the way we look at these bundle of rights, the first four, which deal with the full board recall and the individual director recall, approving regular amendments to the articles or bylaws, and approving fundamental amendments to the articles or bylaws, in short, those are powers that we believe are achievable in principle under either of the two models, the designator model and the membership model. It is easier, well, it may be slightly easier under the membership model, but in general, we agree that those are powers that are achievable. With both of them, you would need, ICANN or CCWG is going to need some work done on the organizations, you know, the SOs, ACs, and the like that will be selecting directors, because to do that, you need to be some sort of legal person. And under the membership model, a member has to be a legal person. So we would... there will be some upfront work required in both scenarios. And for something like the full board recall, there will probably be some additional implementation steps that will be required because there will need to be some sort of a mechanism for triggering obligations amongst the members or designators to exercise their right and remove their individual directors so that the full board is recalled. The details of that, I think, are really for a next phase. Could be done by contract or could be done through some sort of arrangement in the bylaws themselves, but there will need to be some sort of arrangement in that regard. So that's our view, because I do want to give people the chance to ask us questions of these things. But that's our view, and somebody has said in an effort to keep it simple, that's our view of the first four powers that have been articulated. And let me pause there and see if Rosemary has anything she wants to add to that. And then we can either, what I'd like to do is to continue. I see there's a number of hands up. Leon, tell me if you feel differently, but what I would suggest is that we continue with the discussion of the fifth and sixth power, and then we take questions on the whole thing.
Josh, this is home. Just walk through it quickly, and then if walk through the whole thing, and then if Rosemary has things she feels she needs to clarify, that's fine. But if we go back and forth, we're not going to get through this and then get to questions.
Okay. Okay, so with the fourth and fifth, and those are basically the same thing. The fifth and sixth, approving of the strategic plan or approving of the budget. This is going to be different, and the ability to execute on these powers is different in the member model versus the designator model. And the reason it's different, it relates primarily to what is articulated, under corporate law. The members, by law, have the power to reserve, I don't want to say any decision, but they basically have the power to reserve decisions to themselves in the bylaws. And the kinds of issues here that are articulated, this approval of a strategic plan or approval of a budget, are decisions that the members can reserve to themselves. So that means that the board would approve the bylaw and present it, approve the budget as an example, or approve the strategic plan and present it to the members for their approval. And it wouldn't be effective until it was approved by both the member constituency and by the board. That is very clear in corporate law, and the members can reserve those rights to themselves. With the designators, however, there is less clarity. And that is because there is no, the designators under law are treated, differently than members. And the designators have enumerated the powers that are reserved to, that are reserved up above, 1 through 4, but they don't have a general ability to reserve certain decisions to their approval in the same way that members do. And the other weakness, or vulnerability, I should say, to achieving these powers for the community in a truly binding manner is that the designators, under corporate law, don't have standing or don't have the ability to bring a suit against the company or the board for violation of fiduciary duties or for the board exceeding its authority. Members do have that standing, but designators themselves do not. So those are the two principal vulnerabilities. And the way that we would try, because you've hired us to help you try to figure out paths to resolution, if for other reasons a member model were simply not acceptable to ICANN or CCWG, that what we would look to try to do would be to create some contracts between the designators and the board, or the company really, but some contracts between the designator and the company that gave, where the board agreed, the company and the board through the company agreed to defer certain decisions to the designators for their approval, but the risk there is that we've explained, and I think you all have heard ad nauseum, the risk there is that you can't do something, and for that contract to be enforceable, it can't cause the board to abdicate its statutory obligations and responsibilities to manage the affairs of the company and its fiduciary duty in that regard. So if the contract goes too far in placing control of the affairs of the company in the hands of these, you know, the designators, then that contract would not be enforceable. Now, certainly we can, and we've talked about, we can devise some methods for internal review, and it's part of the second document that was proposed, or that was sent back to you all from Adler and Sidley, that talks about, you know, reconsideration and independent review panels and the like, that can, you know, where designators or other organizations or groups can ask for reconsideration of a board decision, and can do some things to strengthen that, and to, you know, in some ways, like the GAC already has, to strengthen the persuasive power of the community's view on the board. But ultimately, in the designator model, things like the budget and the strategic plan, those decisions are going to be ultimately reserved to the board to decide on behalf of ICANN, and not there is no absolute or certain blocking power in the same way that there would be, you know, for members. So it does, you know, we can do what we can to try to help get there, but there is risk of a lack of enforceability that you don't have, a lack of enforceability of the rights that the community would be seeking through designators that you don't have if you establish those rights through members. And that's not to say that you have to be members. What it's meant to say is that you have to be cognizant of these vulnerabilities if, in weighing how important it is for you to have these powers, 5 and 6, and how important it is for your rights to be absolute with respect to these powers. And when I say absolute, I mean that the board and the company can't go forward without the community approval. Now, of course, we've also talked about another way that the designators can express their desire and influence the decisions of the board, is to replace those board members that are not adhering to the views of the community or the designators, as expressed through the designators. And, you know, we talked about having special meetings and the like, but you can do that. I know there is reluctance by some to have to resort to that, but to me, you know, and to those of us, you know, that is not an uncommon tool in the toolkit. It is very rarely, you know, has to be exercised, but it is an effective tool because it is there and it is available, and board members know that it is available, and so they have to, you know, balance and approach their decision making with the interests of ICANN, you know, in acting in their fiduciaries, but also the interests of those community groups that are vested in ICANN's success, and bring their own, you know, interest to that equation as well. So with that, let me pause and see, Rosemary, if you've got anything you want to add, and then we can open this up for questions.
Thank you, Josh. Well, I'd like to just be totally clear. If you want those two powers, the last two, and you want them in a way that is solidly, robustly enforceable and straightforward, simple, you've mentioned simple several times in various emails as well, you're going to have to use the member model. If you are willing to either not have them be quite as enforceable or you just, you know, some sort of reconsideration right that that would expire, not one that would be a reconsideration and a reconsideration and a reconsideration that amounts to a veto of a board decision, then you can look at the designator model. I want to add one more caveat about what we're doing, as Josh said, is we are working against the legal form when we use contracts. So the legal form being a corporate law matter, and now we're taking contracts and kind of working against the legal norms and the way the law was meant to be set up, you know, the kind of arrangements it contemplates. And one problem with the contractual arrangements is not only that they might not be enforceable, but if they were enforceable, if under these contracts someone could force the board to do something that was not arguably in its fiduciary duties, the other possibility is the contract can be enforced and your individual directors could then be sued by people who didn't like that result for breaching their fiduciary duties, which I think puts those directors in a pretty impossible position. They either have to breach the contract or they have to breach their duties. And breaching the contract would be an ICANN issue of ICANN breach, and breaching their duties is a personal liability issue. So I can't be any clearer that I think we've tried to tell you again and again that these certain powers are designed to be exercised by members in a corporate structure and not by designators. And so it's all a workaround to try and get you as much as we can under the designator model, which I think many of you have been interested in, and so we've really pushed it to its limits. But I do think there are limits, and I think at the end of the day, if you really want truly enforceable power on those last two and you want it to be straightforward, you're stuck with the member model. It's not perfect. It has other downsides, but it's for those two powers, that's where you should go.
Thank you very much, Josh and Rosemary, for your pretty clear answers. I think it's just to take some stock on this. It's pretty clear to me that it all comes down to how much influence or how much power on budget and strategic plans does the community want. And since the four other powers are achievable by either model, and as you said, and I really appreciate the clearness of your statement that if we want enforceability with regards to budget and strategic planning, the way to achieve that would be a membership organization, although I note that, of course, Robin proposes or suggests that adding some provisions to the bylaws under the designator model could also do the trick for this. But since your answer has been very clear, I don't think that that would be achievable, since it's very clear to me that the way to go would be the membership model with regards to how enforceable we can have these things gone. So I'd like to, of course, open the floor for discussion. I see Caboose has been waiting for a long time, as well as Alan and David. So, Caboose, could you please take the floor?
Very, very grateful to Josh and Rosemary that this time they were more than clear, very crystal clear. First, could I ask them to kindly put what they said, which I understood correctly and without any problem, put it on a paper? I think it would fit not more than a page, not more than a single page. Therefore, the four first group, we can achieve our objectives, grosso modo, with either of the two models. Two, with the two others, we could achieve it with member model, but we could not achieve it with a designator model unless we get additional arrangement, contractual arrangements, and then providing the disadvantage or drawback of the contractual arrangement in a way that was mentioned. Again, put it that in a wording. Now, I come to my last important point, question. The issue of a strategy and a strategic plan is a part of the mission and core value. To what extent the board could have departure from that? I don't think that they could have a major maneuver to get out of that, because they have to remain within the core mandate or mission and core value. So the only thing remains, it is now on discussion, is the issue of strategy. Budget. So then we have to see that to what extent this is so important and critical that for achieving that, we have to make a lot of investment in either of the two models, either membership or in the designators. And is it so critical and so important, this budgetary issues, and how much is the budget, and so on and so forth. This is, and the last point that I have to make is it possible that our distinguished legal firms, for the first four, also indicate the extent to which the bylaw could or need to be changed for model of member and model of designator. And for the last two groups, the extent to which just titles and so on and so forth, but not the textual part, Article 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, X, Y, Z. So we have to know the extent to which the bylaw should be changed, and then we have the opportunity to the implementation and complexity of implementation would be in a better position to comment on that. Would it be possible that they make such a thing? Once again, I'm very, very grateful for both of them. Their explanation was quite clear and very, very appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Caboose. I'm pretty sure that they will provide us with information. And as for your second question with regards to, if I understood well, the bylaw implementation that would be required to the designer model and the membership model, I think it would be a little bit premature to put the lawyers to work into it, since we haven't really decided which model we would like to propose. And this is something that will definitely come to at a later stage, but I would ask for you to be a little bit patient until the CCWG weighs all the alternatives in the table and we set up our proposal for public comment. Next in the queue is Alan Greenberg.
Thank you very much. From my personal point of view, and that really doesn't matter, but I'll state it because it is, will explain why my question is important to me. I believe it is sufficient enough to have the first four enshrined in bylaws and the last two enforceable only by ensuring that we have goodwill of the board to listen to the community or they get removed. Certainly with the current boards and recent boards, I believe that would be sufficient, and I think ultimately the threat says listen to the community or we will remove the directors who are not willing to listen to the community. So my personal point of view says that's sufficient. However, something I heard when we were talking about the ability to remove the board in the designator model bothers me. I think I heard that it would probably require contracts or bylaws or something to ensure that each of the parts of the each of the designators remove their board members. That's fine for the ACs and SOs, but over half the board right now is selected by the nominating committee, and I believe in any viable model we could not bind the nominating committee to make a decision to remove directors. Therefore, it comes down to can the rest of the community remove those selected by the nominating committee? And if we can't do that, we may have a real problem with this model. So I'd like some clarity on, is it possible for the ACs and SOs to remove any or all board directors or only the ones that they themselves have appointed? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Helen. You raise a very valid question. The outcome is also something we need to consider in the equation. And next in the queue is David McCauley, but he has agreed to be bypassed to go to Josh Hoffheimer. So, Josh, could you please take the floor and, of course, provide some reactions to what Robin was saying on the chat, and if you could also address the question that has been raised by Alan at this point, it would be appreciated. Thank you.
Sure. And let me start with Alan, since that was most recently asked. So, Alan, the way I understand the nominating committee today is effectively, as a practical matter, it sort of replicates the work, the direct selection of members by the SOs and ACs, because the nominating committee is organized to reflect certain constituencies as well. So I agree, under either the member or designator model, we have to take a look at the nominating committee and how we organize that going forward, so that because at the end of the day, you do want the ability of whoever is putting a board member on to have the ability to remove that board member. I mean, you want to have both sides of that coin. So we may need to look at the nominating committee and how that's organized in order to bring that about. But that's more an aspect of implementation from our perspective, and one that we would solve under either model. And we don't see that as an impediment, something to work through, but not an impediment. But your general question as well that you asked at the end, do the SOs or ACs have the ability to remove, you know, any or all directors? And the answer to that is no. Whether you have designators or members, they can remove the board, the director that they select. But if you and I were each designators, I don't have the ability to remove your designator, and you don't have the ability to remove my designator. The board can remove anyone for cause, but I only have the ability to remove mine without cause, which is what we're really talking about here. It may be, obviously, in your mind, it can be that there's a reason, there's cause, or there's a reason for doing it, but I'm talking about the legal distinction between, you know, cause and without cause. So we don't get to remove each other's, and that's why we talk about having a contract or some sort of a no-confidence mechanism in the bylaws, where those organizations that are given the ability to select directors, whether they be members or designators, would also enter into a contract that basically says, or, you know, they'd be signing up for, you know, amendments or for language in the bylaws that basically says, you know, if there is effectively a vote of no confidence in the board and more than, you know, 50%, 60%, whatever the threshold, but more than X percent of the designators or members desire to remove their board members and remove the whole board, then everyone agrees that they will act to remove their members. That's what we talked about with contract. And you're really going to have it in either scenario as well, because you don't want to be in a situation where, let's say it's 60% or 70% to remove the full board. You don't want to be in a situation where the 70% do it, but the 30% who didn't want to just say, fine, but I'm leaving my board members in place. You know, you'd want an agreement that says that even those 30% will be, in effect, dragged along and will go along with that decision and will select new board members so that you can get a fresh start. That's the answer to the first part. And then, Robin, to quickly answer your second part, because I don't want to dominate things, and I think the chat has gone into it, but the bylaws themselves also have to be, as pointed out, have to be valid. And if the bylaw were to say that the board has to accept the budget of that's approved by the members, then that's also, you know, causing the board to abdicate its, you know, responsibilities under law and its fiduciary obligations. That's why something like that is problematic if you're outside of the member scenario, where even in the member scenario, it's not that the members get to dictate the budget, but they do get to approve the budget that's presented by the board. And I'll stop.
Thanks. Thanks for your answers, Josh. I see that David's question has been answered. And then next on the queue, I used to have Greg Shatton. I now only see Alan Greenberg and David McCauley. So, well, if you did lower your hand, Greg, that's okay. So next on the queue would be Alan Greenberg.
Thank you. I just wanted to highlight in the chat that the concept of binding the NomCom or the NomCom delegates to follow the orders of other parts of the community, I think would essentially question their very existence and the independence that we associate with the NomCom, and I think that would be a non-starter. I'm speaking of purely on my own, but I think that it would just kill the whole process. Samantha in the Sam Eisner in the chat said, could board members agree through a pre-service letter to resign if some other circumstances are satisfied? That is, the ACs and SOs remove their members, and assuming that's possible, that might well solve the problem. But the concept of binding the NomCom to take action in some circumstances, I think, is a non-starter. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Next on the queue, I have David McCauley.
Thank you, Leon. David McCauley here. I have a question for Rosemary. Rosemary, you mentioned that with respect to the fifth and sixth powers that we're looking for to use contracts, we would push them to the limits. My question is, what would the contract be like that would supplement the statutory rights for under the membership model? Would it be different for the? And I'm talking about full board recall here. Is that not pushing it to the limit? I'm just wondering if that has the same disability. Thank you.
It's an excellent question. We thought about that. We would obviously like to not have to resort to contract in an ideal world, but contracts are a perfectly valid way of getting things done, and I didn't mean if it came out that way to somehow be, dissing contracts as a way of getting something done. The contract among the members could, first of all, there's a couple of ways it could be done. We've been mentioning on the chat that one possibility is that it's not even a contract among the members. It might be a contract where a sort of contract where the directors essentially would submit, when they become directors, a resignation conditioned on the occurrence of a recall vote reaching a certain threshold. And so then it's just a voluntary resignation that each director has. It's voluntary except in the sense that in order to become a director, you had to provide it. It's a condition of being a director, and you can put qualifications on directors. So when we talk about a contract solution there, because it's just one triggering event, whatever that contract looks like, whether it's an advance resignation from the various directors or whether it is some sort of an agreement among the members or between the members and ICANN to remove their directors, to take that particular action in the event that the community votes for a recall at a high threshold, it's a relatively simple contract and causes me less heartburn than the kinds of things we'd be trying to do where we're really working against the fact that the board's supposed to have these rights and the designators are not supposed to have them, and we're trying to give the designators these rights by contract. I don't think we run against that same kind of working against a public policy almost that's inherent in the law when we talk about having all the members just decide that, under certain conditions, they all want to remove their directors. Or, again, as I said, possibly the directors are resigning en masse. We'd have to work through details because you can't have all the directors resign without notifying the California Attorney General. And, so there's a lot of, I think Holly said this probably a dozen times, the devil's in the details. But we are much less concerned, and I'm not concerned about the contract among the members to recall the way I am about the contract among the designators to exercise powers over the board's decisions.
Thank you very much.
Next on the queue, I see Josh. Is that an old hand or a new hand? It's an old hand. So next on the queue is Greg Shatton. Greg, could you please take the floor?
Thanks, Greg Shatton. Just to pick up on something that Alan was saying about the that he believed that the NOMCOM would not enter into any kind of joint spill-the-board arrangement. That would seem to me to mean that we could not achieve the full spill-the-board goal that we're talking about unless we change the NOMCOM, or Alan's just wrong about that. But it would seem to me that we'd be only spilling the non-NOMCOM related board members. Technically, the NOMCOM, you know, may have the right to recall its own board members, but I guess if it's going to be so independent that it, you know, can't even enter into such an agreement, then we have a flaw that exists currently and would exist across every model that we could possibly imagine. Thanks.
Thanks, Rick. Do the lawyers want to react to Greg's comment?
Yeah, okay. this is Josh. I mean, I think to Greg's point, you'd have to have a nominating committee. If you had your nominating committee, if you didn't make any changes to what you had today with regard to the nominating committee, then I think you would have to have a nominating committee. You know, that. And whether it was individual designators as individuals that comprise the nominating committee, or that the committee itself becomes some sort of unincorporated association, they would need to enter into the same agreement with the rest of the designators and with the company, or having their designators be, you know, agree to sign the resignation letter in advance, because it would be just as they might want, you know, the other selectors of the board might want to recall the whole board. The nominating committee selectors might want to recall the whole board. So it goes both ways. I mean, if we're talking about redoing so much of the bylaws as part of this overall process in transition, I'm not sure why that wouldn't be an exercise that would be undertaken. And again, that's without making any other changes to the nominating committee. But it may be that the structure of the nominating committee is revisited as well.
Thanks, Josh. Next in the queue, I have Alan Greenberg. Alan, could you please take the floor?
Thank you. What I said about the NOMCOM is, as I said, is purely my opinion, but it's based on a fair amount of experience in ICANN, and implying in any way that the NOMCOM is not completely independent, even if it's only to remove directors, I think would taint the concept. And I'm willing to be wrong, but that's my personal opinion. But I thought in the chat we determined that a pre-service letter could cover that. The pre-service letter would not allow the community to selectively remove directors, including NOMCOM directors, who were reticent to follow community advice. But from what I saw, it would allow us to remove the whole board en masse. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Next on the queue, I see Ed McNicholas. Ed, could you please take the floor?
Yes, I just wanted to add into the discussion that it's going to be a lot easier to solve out the issues of approval of budget and such on this side of it, because the other side, and I don't want to move to the other discussion too much, but if we tried to use the IRP process for that on the back end, as we tried to lay out our memo, that there are complexities about having core board functions subject to binding arbitration, and frankly, there's an issue about whether you make the IRP into a potentially unaccountable body on that side. So I think we're going to get much more accountability if we solve out the power of the members to approve the budget on the front end here by saying, if we go to a membership model, they have the rights, they have the powers I've reserved to them up front. That's going to work much more effectively than trying to solve it on the back end after dispute through an IRP process.
Thanks, Ed. Next on the line, I see Sam Eisner. Sam, could you please take the floor? Sam, are you mute? Okay, we'll wait for Sam.
Hi there, sorry about that. This is Sam Eisner. On the NOMCOM, and some of this is a broader conversation for the CCWG than the lawyers, but I know we've been having a bit of a chat in the chat about it, and I stated one of my concerns about making the NOMCOM a member, and that the NOMCOM itself is a collection of basically all parts of the ICANN community. And then if you make the NOMCOM a member, you then also have parts of that membership being represented by other entities that would be members. So how does that impact different balances? You know, are there some groups on the NOMCOM that aren't members, some that are, because it's still not clear to me if only our designating entities are members versus every ACNSO across ICANN. How are these types of issues considered? But then separately on the NOMCOM issue, if solely for a exercising a removal requirement, so if there was an agreement among the ICANN community through whatever process that will be developed that the full board should be recalled, only in that instance couldn't you then say to the NOMCOM, okay, so then pull back your members because you're a designator or a member, or because you have the right to appoint, you're the people that have to exercise this right to take down. Or conversely, could you then tell the board that this is a situation where it should consider using its removal requirement under the bylaws for those NOMCOM directors, but establish a community process for those? Are there other ways to address this other than trying to figure out how we go in and refigure the NOMCOM, because that is one of the places where we say that there is accountability, because the NOMCOM itself gets to appoint directors outside of the other appointing community processes.
Thanks, Sam. I'd like to point to one comment made by Matthew in the chat, and it says, don't mean to confuse, but why not submit NOMCOM board nominations to community approval? That's a regular process for directors in many organizations. So could someone from the legal team, the lawyers, give us a quick reaction on this suggestion made by Matthew? I don't know if maybe Josh, Holly, or Rosemary.
This is Holly. I'm happy.
Thanks, Holly. Go ahead.
I think you could do that. I mean, we'd have to figure out what the mechanism is. As I understood it, the NOMCOM is already formed to reflect some community input, but maybe that's not done sufficiently. There are certainly processes that we could build to have greater community input into a NOMCOM selection of director candidates, definitely a possibility. So we can certainly look at how you do that, and I can think of a number of mechanisms. The question is, if you want to try to bind them or not. I mean, and we always have this question of who is the community? Are we talking about the community working through various groups? Who are organized. We just have to figure that all out. But, yes, we could have a mechanism for greater community involvement in the NOMCOM through providing suggested candidates or providing ideas around what kinds of qualifications should be looked for. We're happy to think about that.
May I follow up? It's Rosemary.
Yes, please do. Please do, Rosemary.
So right now it's called a nominating committee, and one of the ironies is that it's not nominating anybody, it's actually appointing them. And following up on what Holly's saying, it could in fact nominate for election, I think this is where Mathieu was going, for election by either the members or by the directors, by the board, the board consisting of the directors appointed by the members. So that those are at least two ways you could build that in. I still think the pre-service resignation is going to be the easiest way to achieve the full board recall in terms of whether you're in a membership structure or a designator structure. It's probably the easiest. And I share Holly's question about when we talk about a recall vote, I've never assumed, although it may have appeared that way from what we've given you because I don't think we've ever teased it out, I've never assumed that that community vote had to be a vote of the same people who are members or designators or whatever. That community could be defined, thought through, defined however you want, and the resignations or the agreement to remove directors would be triggered by whatever this defined community's very, very high threshold vote would be. So I guess the point of that, we haven't teased that out because I think, as Josh said earlier, we see these as issues for a later phase. I don't think it's realistic to fully flesh out both the designator model and the membership model all the way down to the level of actually what the bylaws would say, what the contracts would, like drafting it all out. I don't think we have time for that, and I also think there's some such basic differences between them that you probably ought to pick one or the other and then let us flesh that out and wrestle with some of these problems within that model, knowing that in the big picture, you got the powers you really needed from one versus the, or decided you didn't really need them and you wanted the other model.
Thank you for this, Rosemary. Sam, is that an old hand or is it a new hand? Okay, so next on the queue is Cavus. Cavus, could you please take the floor?
Yes, still I am not very clear on the how we recall the entire board in relation to what we are discussing half an hour about nominating committee and so on and so forth. Suppose that SO and AC decide for the recall of the entire board member, but nominating committee does not. So what will happen in that case? Half of the board will be removed, or there will be no removal at all? Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. Remember, we were making an analogy to a cookbook and the recipes. Of course, one of these recipes would be how to remove the board either as a whole or on individual members. So I think this would be a jump into the next phase that Rosemary was just commenting. And while we already have a template on that, I believe, and that has been commented, of course, this would be something that would need to be clarified by the lawyers at some stage. And I'm mindful of the time. We're almost reaching the top of the hour. And before I go to Alan, I would like to just state clear that the documents that we expect to get from the lawyers at this stage, meaning the simple feedback on the headlines, etc., are not only expected to come for these comparative charts, but also for the rest of the documents that so far have been worked. So I do have in mind that that document for this chart would be in place by this time tomorrow. And I don't mean to have the lawyers rushed, of course, to have all the documents ready by this time tomorrow. But, of course, if you could have a similar document with a very simple explanation as a brief overview of the document for the other documents as well, that would be excellent. And I will go to Holly, who I think has a direct reaction to this. So, Holly, would you please take the floor? And after that, I will go to Alan Greenberg.
Thank you very much, Leon. Look, we can certainly do the revisions that I spoke of the document that's up on the chart, and with a summary that gives you what Josh and Rosemary so crisply provided, and also has some headline conclusions through the chart that you can look at quickly so that you'll see what sort of the conclusions that you might want to draw from it are. I think going back to old documents, given that this chart summarizes an awful lot of information that we've already provided, I would like the opportunity, I'd like the permission, Leon, for us lawyers to go back and look at those other documents and only provide those summaries if we believe that the information hasn't been crisply summarized in this document. Otherwise, I think we're spinning wheels. And I know you've got a lot going on and are going to need a lot of our attention in the next several days. So I'm trying to find a way to streamline. Is that acceptable?
Thank you very much, Holly. That is perfectly acceptable, and not only acceptable, but desirable. We don't want to duplicate the work that has already been done. So, yes, we would definitely like you to proceed as suggested. Only go into the information that has, of course, been addressed and in the recent documents, and there's no need to duplicate. Someone is in the kitchen, I think, and we would really appreciate to mute their line. And so next in the queue, I have Alan Greenberg. Alan, could you please take the floor?
Thank you very much. As I said before, the concept, if we're trying to remove the whole board, I believe the pre-service letter of irrevocable letter of resignation will cover that. However, I'm assuming that this letter of resignation can refer to some action of the community, not necessarily the action to remove the board, the all of their members. And I'd like confirmation from the community, because if that's the case, we can word that letter carefully, which in fact could give the community the ability to remove certain specific members, NOMCOM members, and not necessarily all of them, which would be a far more practical process, in that if you have part of the board refusing to listen to the community and the other part voting in favor of listening to the community, we could only remove those who are reticent. And that might be a more granular way of addressing problems and not nearly as nuclear. So I guess I'd like confirmation that the pre-service letter of resignation could reference some action of the community and be very specific about what that action is and not necessarily be related solely to removal of their own directors. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. I'm mindful of the time. We've reached the top of the hour, and we didn't go through the review of the Working Party 2 document. Let's have this. If you have a short answer for this, this is the time to provide it. And if this would be a more elaborate answer, maybe we could take this offline so we can adjourn this call in time. So, Holly, do you have a short answer for this?
I apologize. I would need you to restate the question.
Leon, it's Rosemary.
Rosemary?
Rosemary, go ahead.
I think that it is possible to get fancier with the pre-service resignation letter so that a particular director's letter would be triggered, not all of the NOMCOM directors. We're talking about all the directors having these letters, by the way. But you could draft them to contemplate other votes. I would have thought that maybe I'm really misunderstanding Alan's comments, but I thought the NOMCOM was sought this independence, and it seems to me that being able to pick off NOMCOM directors individually is in some ways more offensive to the NOMCOM's independence than a situation where the only circumstance under which the NOMCOM named directors are taken off the board or would resign is when every director of everybody is resigning. That seems the least offensive to NOMCOM independence. They're being treated no differently, no better than all the other directors. If you start being able to pick off individual ones, then you're really second-guessing the NOMCOM. And I'm a little confused about which way we were going.
Thanks, Rosemary. So I think this kind of answers your question, Ellen. We've passed the top of the hour, make a really fast recap. Next step is, of course, to get the summary charts from the lawyers in really plain and simple language for everyone to understand. And we'll have our intense sessions tomorrow and Friday. And as we discussed on the list, we would expect to have at least one of the lawyers present in every call. And we will have a legal sub-team call in between both days of the intensive session so we can address things that need to be taken care of on the fly. And, with nothing else to add, if there is someone that wants to add something, now is the time. So if I don't see any hands or comments, then I would call, I would have this call adjourned. I thank you very, very much for your clearness, for your hard work, and all of the team members and the CCWG members for your efforts and contributions. It's been a very fruitful meeting, and I'll talk to you very, very soon. So thank you very much, everyone.
Thanks, Leon. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Thomas.